Eagles look all the same, that's all I know.
Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face 42. I'm Dan.
Sean.
Coming to you live. You got your name down?
Yeah, I had like something in my mouth, so that's why I had you lean in, and I go.
I love how professional this is going to be. This is a podcast about music news and music culture. And
allegedly.
And there's a lot of...
Hashtag no politics.
Oh, there's a lot of politics in this. There's a lot of... I'm like Dan. This. I usually do political things. Please don't find me. I don't need any more hate mail. But if you do want to find me, I'm a Dan from the internet pretty much everywhere.
P.O. Box.
P.O. But oh God. Too soon.
And they're going to send like chopped off fingers and shit with a note on it back to your next.
No, this isn't Austin.
All right, so...
Sean, what do you do?
We got some good shit. I run around the world in bikes and shit.
And where can people follow you? Because that's all this is for.
At SW Suarez.
I'm kidding. We're gonna get the show on the road. It's music news and music culture and a lot of stuff to talk about. But speaking of culture, Migos dropped the Walk It Talk It video from Culture 2. Sean's just like, oh God. And it's basically like a Soul Train redo. I think the only reason it's worth watching is because Jamie Foxx plays Don Cornelius.
And that shit was hilarious.
And that went really hard. But like... Oh,
and Drake was in there, okay.
And all the Migos have...
Fake Jamaican.
Oh, yeah, fake Jamaican Drake's in there spinning around and doing other Soul Train nonsense. And, oh, I forgot, it's Culture Ride, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then. But, yeah, the song already came out with Culture 2. You already know how Sean and I feel about that album. And we just wanted to mention the music video, more or less.
It's weird watching that trap.
There have been... Say. Oh, yeah, watching Soul Train to trap music is a very weird experience.
Yeah, let's say the least.
But going into politics, Pussy Riot over in Russia, they had their recent election.
Election, quote unquote.
Quote unquote election. Allegedly election. Whatever.
Stop.
I'm going to stop right now. Quit while we're ahead. So Pussy Riot, which has been well known and kind of infamous for being anti-Putin. As a like
super hardcore
Russian rock punk group. I think they've been jailed before by Putin.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm pretty sure. But they released a new song called Elections to coincide with Putin's non-election. And
well,
I mean,
it's got some takes.
Yeah. It's roughly translated, but let me see if I can find the best part. Oh, it says, we were given 6 years illegitimately, a dead bodies in the detention center. Our criminal case was fabricated. We are getting 6 years of high security regime illegitimately. So it probably rolls off better off the tongue in Russian, but it's hard hitting. This is not that Lana Del Rey, like fake woke shit. This is very intense.
Yeah, exactly. Finally, no more Lana Del Rey. Oh, the world sucks.
Oh, I guess things are kind of bad for women sometimes. And I don't know, let's make things better. No, this is like straight hardcore. Like, 6 years we're gonna fight, 6 years we're not gonna obey, 6 years I'm gonna start a gang, 6 years we're not gonna eat scraps. Like, that's not even the chorus.
Revolution
that
time,
is
man.
The verse. So, yeah, if you wanna really get into politics and wokeness, the new Pussy Riot election song, it's really good. It's like kind of lo-fi and almost trappy in a way. It was really weird because I was expecting more of a rock thing, but oh my God, Sean loves the next story.
I didn't know you put that in there.
I did put it in there. Purely for the reason I'm going to show you. And so now we're going to go into the news stuff. And by the way, I usually talk about the albums that we're going to be reviewing. And that's Preoccupation's new album, New Material. Diplo's new EP, California, which will be definitely fun for Sean and I to talk about, given Sean's love of electronic music. And Jack White's new album, Boarding House.
Beach.
Boarding House Beach? I put Boarding House Reach in the rundown. That's hilarious. Boarding House Reach Around. Anyway, so War Cambridge Analytica is the first story. So the reason why this is music-focused is because... If I can explain this in 20 seconds. Cambridge Analytica, the story around that is around Facebook using quizzes to get a sense of what people liked, and there's the rumor or, like, allegation that it influenced the election. There's a lot to go into that, but whatever. But apparently because of these quizzes that were taken, there's a lot of musical insights to be found. including apparently one that says fans of the Smiths are neurotic and fans of Bjork are apparently open.
And what if you're Sean and you like both?
Makes a lot of sense. Then you're
good. I agree with the Bjork one because I will listen. I love experimental Weird House music. And if you're a Marilyn Manson fan, you're probably not very agreeable.
Really?
Allegedly.
So I guess the personality quiz is trying to make assumptions based off of, oh, you like this artist, therefore.
2018, you can't assume.
2018, you can never assume, really. Thank you, Sean, for correcting me on that. Most woke man in America. But apparently, apparently the quiz, yeah, it took your artist that you like, or took a couple of random artists and said, okay, therefore, by liking this artist, you're this. Which I thought to be really funny, and more Facebook stupidness. What did you think about it? Because you're just laughing the whole time.
It's just funny because you're trying to make analytics out of stupid people.
I mean, they're the people who fell for the, oh, I'll take a dumb quiz on the internet and give this random quiz all of my Facebook information in the process. That'll be okay.
No, I don't think I've ever done a quiz in my life, and never will.
Like, I purposely don't on principle, but yeah, that'll do it. By the way,
hashtag delete Facebook, fuck Mark Zuckerberg, he's second on the list.
And if you
he's
want
a
to
test subject.
If you want to hear about how I was really smart and called called delete Facebook way back in 2014, I want to say, I'll leave a link in the description, but also it's on my YouTube page, Dan from the Internet. Killing it! Okay. I should not have said killing it with this next one, but we are going to be talking about Killer Mike and the NRA. So...
By the way, this is the first quote on the thing. I'm African American. You know, 54 years out of apartheid. I'm very pro Second Amendment. This is why.
Okay, so...
All right. We watched a video.
In another vaguely... This is a very political episode, but I think most of the politics is in this block before we get to the new review, but... This coincides with the Parkland shooting and the whole debate in America about gun violence and how many guns should we have in society and where. And people really quickly go to like ideological sides on that tend to be. And Killer Mike, who supported Bernie Sanders in the election, tend to seen as really left, is taking the gun control position, or not anti-gun control position, which is generally seen as really right-leaning. Yeah. It's not surprising to me because Killer Mike has always been like pro Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. And a lot of his, I didn't know the NRA did content, but there's a thing called NRA TV. And he did an interview on one of their shows talking with another host about gun control, especially in black communities, and how for people of color, guns can be seen in the same way that, I mean, like it's seen as a way of defense.
Well, yeah, especially if you're in, I mean, look at Vince Staples rapping about shitty sides of Long Beach, or like interviews back, oh, you go over there, you get shot.
Right, like Killer Mike's a Southern rapper, so he's talking about Atlanta, and he's even said...
It's more rough over there, yeah.
He even said in the interview, like, police don't come quickly enough, so if it's your gun or waiting for the police, then it's your gun. And he's has that very strong opinion. He has a lot of very strong opinions, and I think... Even though this is an opinion I don't fully agree with from Killer Mike, I think Killer Mike is one of the few people, not just political pundits, not just musicians, just artists, people in general, who is so like straightforward and convicted with their political motivations. You know it's coming straight from the heart, and there's no like BS around it. And like even if I disagree with that, I go, I respect that because I know it's no BS around it. Like that's really what you think. And like there's...
He gave his his two thoughts about it.
And yeah, and all the arguments are really good. Do you have any other stuff to add about that?
No, I mean, I agree with him for the most part. A point, yeah. Because I'm the same way.
But before we go in, no politics.
But I'm like, I don't want to be personal to anybody. Because I check no politics.
But yeah, that's just little music stuff in there. But let's talk about pure music. Preoccupations released a new album.
Yes!
It is called...
New Material.
That's a great name.
Also, the album cover's kind of dope.
Who else did an album name that was very similar like that you showed me? Like, they released their last album within the past 2 years, like their final album period. And it had some cool album name that was indicative of this being like our last album. I forget what it was. Like
School of Seven Bells, maybe?
I think so.
But that SVIIB was their last album.
No, that wasn't it. Okay, never mind. I just took us off a random tangent. But
yeah, I'm like trying to think of who band, what band stopped. I don't know.
I really can't remember. I really love the name New Material because it's like, hey, we have a new album coming out.
No, New Order.
New Order.
Holy hell. Music Complete.
Music Complete. That's what I was thinking of.
Complete Music and for the remixes. Yeah. The New Order, their album, 2015. Music Complete.
Yes.
Don't Sleep.
That was really bothering me, but
that was a really
cool
good album. But anyways, yeah, new material.
It's eight songs and it's 36 minutes long.
Thank you.
Which we like here at Audio Face. Just make your fucking music, get on with your point, and move on with our lives. There's more content to get to, so.
By the way, did we state where we are?
Guinness Industries?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to say. Hi, Guinness.
By the way, yeah, we are. He is on spring break, so he is down here. We are documenting this trip a little bit for him. Dan, that is. So he's down here. We're over in Young Guinness Industries as he is on a bed, sleeping.
Yes, Guinness
for
is
the moment.
Guinness is an adorable dog, by the way. All just eyes open.
He has one eye open right now, and that freaks me out because he may just fucking run and tear. So if you're a dog barking, we're in Guinness Industries.
I mean, long time listeners of the show remember a bird, so like this could be worse.
War Purple.
Oh, God.
Anyways, eight songs, 36 minutes long. We reviewed, or I might have just brought it up, Espionage, their single, a little while back. And, you know, the Audio Face rule, one single, that's it, wait till the album. So, I will go first, because I usually do it.
Yeah, and you recommended, I mean, you...
I told you to listen to it. Yeah,
we did this for the, you brought this up this week, so what were your thoughts about it?
Really good. Holy shit. I like this album. So, it almost sounded like if Joy Division were...
I fucked up. I was the guy. My music came out of my speakers. Okay, so if Joy Division...
If Joy Division was around in 2018, I mean, half the band, 90% of the band is, but... And made music then, and we're all in their 20s, this is what it would sound like.
So if Joy Division were younger then...
Yeah, exactly. If they were how they were then and made a band now... That's this album. I'm trying to explain to people who haven't listened to it.
I get that.
So it's...
That's a good description.
Big bass lines, big, really echoey vocals, but really loud. Alternative rock. And it's good.
Fast-paced.
It's really fast-paced for the most part. But original. For the most part. It's doesn't come off as somebody else's work, as it's like... You know, as I've said for the entire fucking podcast, which is stop sounding the fucking same, stop doing the same trap snare thingy and alternative music, robot video game voices, shit. I don't want that anymore. Give me real music. Do something from the heart. And this is what this album is. It's really good. Starts off with Espionage, which is a very, very good song to start with. And the whole album flows very well together. Every song, I don't want any song different on this album, like to change position.
Yeah.
Which is rare. Normally I'll say I want this song here most of the time. You say we're like half this album or mix up the other parts. This one is pretty much good top to bottom. Everything flows, you can tell what sounds they want with the album. And yeah, I mean Espionage, Disarray, Solace, very, very good songs.
Songs one, favorite, three, and six?
Yeah. Those are like some of the best songs I've heard all year.
Wow.
To be honest.
Quite a take.
Yeah. This is almost like MGMT back in February where I go, fuck. I was looking forward to this and this is really, really good.
I'm
happy with it. Yeah. They delivered with what I wanted and yeah, I highly recommend it.
So when you recommended this to me, I kind of vaguely knew of them. I'd recognized their Viet Cong album from 2015.
Preoccupation is not a big band at all.
Yeah. But you know, I'd like listening to music, listening to music. I definitely heard about it a lot. And I want to touch on what you said earlier and then bring that back around.
Yeah.
You said the album flowed very well. I didn't even think that much about the album flow. I think that's how good it was. The fact that usually when I'm reviewing albums, that's like one of the first complaints I have is that this album doesn't flow together or this song could have been moved around. But I didn't once think about the album's flow or structure, having listened to it like for reviewing it until you brought it up, because it's really that good.
Yeah.
There is like, it's close to perfection as far as how you order the album with like each song kind of like leading into each other and building on top of each other and doing a different
slowing
thing.
Slowing down, speeding up, exactly.
Yeah. I think that's one of the benefits of keeping your album succinct and making sure there's less filler and more of what really delivers the whole purpose of the work.
No bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. And so I definitely did that there. I guess I liked it as well too. I like more fast-paced things in general. And I like the kind of...
Type EDM bullshit.
Yeah. I like the kind of... They're right on the border of alternative and rock. They're not too rocky to where we can get later with Jack White, where that's kind of in many places. But like, they have their flow, they have their sound really down. And it does sound really unique. It's really hard for me to... The way you described it with Joy Division earlier, I think is a really good way of putting it, because I can't
compare
the sound to this very
much. Yeah, and that's the first song I heard Espionage. I go, whoa, it sounds like Joy Division, which is one of my all-time favorite bands, even though they only made two albums and then became New Order, which is... probably third on my list or fourth on my list of all-time favorite bands. And so I heard that, like, holy shit, somebody actually tried it.
Yeah.
Like, tried the sound, and it's really, really good. I was surprised. All right, rating system.
We have an arbitrary score. So the arbitrary score system we use in Audioface because every single album review should be arbitrary. People compare the rating systems as though, like, oh, well, you gave this album a what point what and a this point that. Like, it doesn't matter. Whatever. So the arbitrary system for this episode.
Well, we did one of failed U.S. invasions.
Once. Oh, we need to lighten up this podcast. How about
lighten up or
make it crazy. On a scale of U.S. foreign interventions.
Foreign interventions?
Yes. So a time in which we allegedly, or not so allegedly, intervened into another government and took it over. If it went
so
well...
Okay, so that's not just invasions. That's just...
coups.
Whew, all right. How about world coups?
World coups, okay.
On a scale of 1 to Erdogan.
Wait, is Erdogan like a successful coup?
I don't know.
What's a successful coup? Name a successful coup.
Jesus. I don't even want to bring that up because I'm like, I don't want to. I try not to bring communism on the podcast, but I do every time on accident. But yeah, Yun Shea on a scale of 1 to Shea.
Okay, on this arbitrary rating scale of coups.
God, no, we can't do coups.
We can't.
That's too much.
That's too much. We're gonna spend too much time trying to research.
Yeah, exactly. I'm gonna have to look it up because I'm like, is that technically a coup or not?
All right, let's do something. A scale of Guinness's toy bones.
I like that one. I like that one.
And there are 1, 2, 3, 4 on the bed right here, so it's gonna be out of 4.
So it'll be out of 4. All right, there we go. So we got small bone. We got chewed up bone. Has AIDS bone? This bone has little like.
It's like a stick. It's like a branch.
Oh, I'm fucking stupid. All right, so we got stick bone. We got two little bones, one chewed bone, and a medium bone.
I denounce and reject Sean.
My podcast.
Okay.
What's the highest? What's the lowest?
Let's just make it simple and 4 bones, because this is a podcast. No
4
one
bones. Okay,
bones.
So 4 bones. That's it. Okay. 1 bone, shit. 4 bones, good.
Yes. Now that we've gone through all the dynamics of that rating system, I'm going to give it a 4. Not to say it's perfect, but just to say I don't want to cut the bones in half and say what this album did and what it's set to accomplish, it did everything pretty well. I don't have many major complaints about it.
I was going to give it pretty much a 4 as well, which it's like MGMT where if it's close to perfection, but I mean... like, there's nothing that is perfection.
So
maybe Moonshaped Pool.
Since this is something that's, like, in your wheelhouse more, I guess, what else is there to be desired from this album, if anything?
A little bit longer.
A little bit longer?
36 minutes. My perfect album is 45 to 50 minutes long.
Interesting.
About 10 songs, 11 songs.
I'd say that.
Which is usually what Radiohead does, like which is my gold standard.
Right.
And because then that's the perfect... you get everything out so I can see if it changes.
Yeah.
That's really it. Because this one, it felt a little bit short.
It might have been...
and that's the only downside is I want more.
A tiny bit too much refinement. Just a tiny bit too much refinement.
So too much refined sugar?
Yeah. When you're refining too much and... when you're refining too much oil and the U.S. finds out.
Next thing you know, you just see the drone king. Oh, drone king.
Okay. Let's... Coachella.
All right, that's the stop.
Because we're not talking about politics enough in this podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about Coachella's controversial co-owner. So it's actually kind of a good story. Maybe something that you should follow suit in considering your last comment. So he decided to donate $1 million to the Elton John AIDS Foundation because...
Fuck me. Oh, God.
Because previously, this co-owner of Coachella had gotten flack for being anti-LGBT and like...
Really bad, yeah.
Yeah, really bad. And we had talked about that a lot last year. And I think... Maybe just because social justice stuff is more in the news now, but I think that caught on a lot last year with Coachella, in general with people not liking Coachella to begin with, but apparently he's turned his head, or turned his views on that, or at least is realizing that gay people, like, go to concerts as well. Do you see this as anything beyond just, like, a saving face thing, or...
Yeah, it's just cover up. It's all bullshit.
Yeah.
There you go.
But at the same time, it's like, oh, you gave money.
Which, yeah, I mean, I don't want your pity.
All right.
He's probably, you know why he donated AIDS? He probably thought, I need to be pro-LGBTQ.
Oh, yeah, he assumed
that. I'm gonna go donate to AIDS, because that's
what that's what it's all about, like, right?
Right?
Yeah. I don't know how to speculate into him more or less, but I guess it's fair to point out that at least he is publicly signaling like he's changing his tune.
Nah, whatever.
If you wanna care.
Who cares? Coachella's really shit anyways.
So it's no joke, this is truly the most woke quote unquote story of the podcast.
Oh yeah.
This is French Montana, who helped fund a hospital in Uganda that is now serving 300,000 citizens. This is
Universal
none of that
healthcare motherfucker.
Yeah. This is none of that. Oh, I said something nice. Lana Del Rey.
Oh, I'm gonna start getting more active in politics because this makes me sad. No, bitch, I'm going to help open a hospital
in Uganda and save people. Like
300,000 humans. That's a lot of humans.
He put up a donation of $100,000 that eventually got matched by a bunch of other donors, including Diddy and The Weeknd. To construct
the weekend, what the fuck, he cares? He's not talking about his P1s cleaner than church shoes and shit, but he's actually going up to where people don't have shoes? Damn, what the fuck is he doing? He cut off his hair and now he thinks he's all smart and shit?
And Diddy to begin construction on the Subi Health Center, which is now equipped to serve 300,000 citizens. I think it's great. Apparently Ciroc threw in too, so...
I did not hear Ciroc when you said that.
What? What'd you...
I heard Barack. I'm like, what? What?
Yeah, but here's Barack and now all of a sudden.
Anyways, good job, dude.
No, that is like...
That's good shit.
We joke a lot about like wokeness and stuff, but like, this is real here.
So like, is he in the new scale?
I mean, if he's not Vince Staples, he's directly under it.
He's That's good. Good job, French Patana. You get my blessings now.
No, yeah, that's absolutely.
Like, if you make a shit album, we let it pass. You slide.
The audio face rule. It's like, we'd love to give this a 1 out of 4, but not 3 out of 4. Ugandan children.
Yeah, okay.
What are you gonna do? Sorry.
You help out the people for the people.
You know, Pitchfork, other outlets take
the enemy,
take sources and money from other people so that they can have favorable reviews, allegedly. We just do it based on social good. Speaking of social not good, Trey Songz was arrested for felony domestic violence. I love talking about these stories because it's an exercise in watching people's celebrity completely get a hold of them. Because even though he tweeted that, quote, I am being lied on and falsely accused for someone's personal gain, which, you know, could be possible, could happen, maybe.
It's definitely possible.
What's always left in these things is the fucking context. Trey Songz has been involved in violent incidents in the past. In December 2016, Trey was charged with felony assault on a police officer and aggravated assault following a concert in Detroit. In August 2017, he reached a plea deal that reduced the charges to 2 misdemeanor counts of disturbing the peace and received 18 months of probation. And this past December, he was sued by a woman who claims that she attempted to take a photograph with him at a Philadelphia venue when, unprovoked, he, quote, accosted her, smacked the phone out of her hand, hitting her in the face, and breaking her glasses.
So he did the bitch, this chicken is cold.
Yes. The suit also states that Trey has a, quote, propensity towards violence and negative interactions with the public, according to that which occurred May 2017. So given all this information, we're not lawyers, but like, this isn't out of character for
him. He needs to get his jujitsu a little bit. He needs to get a stiletto to the cheek and see how it feels.
Yeah. That should be like the immediate punishment. Just like, get a female lawyer, or like a female judge, and then when they do the case, just like,
push. I'm down.
Go ahead.
Get some fucking Jimmy Choo's on her left hand and just poof, 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 poof. Get some spikes in that face.
Oh man, get cleated heels.
That'd be rough.
That'd be amazing. All right.
Well,
music time.
You do this because I'm very excited to hear your review.
Yes, we've been talking about this on and off a little bit. So Diplo released California. It's an EP that features, let's see, everyone from Lil Yachty and Designer to Gold Link and Drum. And it's Diplo, who is both a talented DJ and one who...
Hypey, typey bullshit.
Yes. And so...
Cats, outer space, marbles, woo. We're so high, we don't know what the fuck we're doing. What is this? This isn't electronic music. Fuck me.
And so Diplo. There's six songs on this EP, and it's only 19 minutes long, so maybe Sean will love it.
I want you to go first, because...
I am going
to
go first, because
I'm excited.
No, so like,
I didn't hear your review last time.
Alternative stuff is more your wheelhouse, so like, I'll start with the electronic thing. And so...
Unless it's pure house, but they don't make fucking albums.
Natürlich. So... I started the album with Worry No More, the first song, which features Santa Gold and Lil Yachty. Santa Gold, Indifferent. Lil Yachty, I would prefer Different. And...
This is a little pump.
God. That was the same type of, as Sean calls, hypey-typey EDM bullshit that, like, Diplo is kind of known for, and is, like, kind of not surprising. I'm like, okay, Diplo's one of the better DJs in this. I know he's more prolific, but, like, maybe this is what's gonna sound like? I don't know. Thankfully, Suicidal and then Look Back by Drum were way better. Suicidal being an improvement, and then Look Back by Drum is like
good shit.
Amazing. It's a really good song. And so there's only six songs in the album, so I feel like if I describe it continuing one by one, it'll be like kind of pointless, I guess. But the main takeaway that I got from this EP that Diplo made is that Diplo remains to be one of the most talented DJs in mainstream EDM, I would say. And that as most mainstream, like most producers in EDM who like do those big concerts at festivals, if you took them away from their MacBook, they're done.
Yeah.
I am fully confident that Diplo has some, not just some, a quite a good understanding of how music just works in general and would hold his own otherwise. As you can tell by Look Back, which is not an elect. And there are songs in here that I think there are only two quote unquote hyphy fivey songs.
There was only one.
No, Worry No More and the Get Right remix.
You kind of hate it. Wasn't that bad. Get Right was straight hyphy typey.
I like Get It Right. Maybe because I like Gold Link, but I think it wasn't as bad as like. There are definitely other artists that could be way worse.
Yeah. So my thing was, it was really. It kind of caught me off guard because I didn't think it was going to be good. It was good until that last song. A last song, then just did the stupid hypey-typey high-pitched voice, same beat that everybody fucking does. And I was on the bike train and I looked at Dan, I go, I escaped it face. For the whole EP, and he did the la-di-da-di-da of EDM. And yeah, the rest of it's okay. The first song I didn't like too much, and Look Back is a really good song.
Yeah, I had Worry No More is like, I hope the rest of the album isn't like this, because it's horrible.
Yeah, exactly. It started off... The first song and the last song suck. The rest of the EP is good. So four songs out of six, that's not bad. Especially for Diplo, who some of the I normally don't like.
I'm at 5 out of 6. I still love the last song. But I know, like, don't. I think we can both agree that Look Back by Drum is like...
That's a really...
Drum as a singer is a hard. Really amazing song. Like, yes. Really good. And then just musicality-wise, you wouldn't know too well that it was like an electronic music artist producing the song. Because it's just...
He did the dead. Like he did the dead mouse, which
it's like
not
a
many people
half
do.
Half rock, half electronic ballad type thing, for Drum. So it's really let his vocals accentuate and really made that work really well. So
that's good shit.
Like I said, we can and purposely don't go into all the little random SoundCloud EPs that pretty major EDM artists release on a weekly basis. But they're like all horrible, and they're all very repetitive, and like it would. Make Sean want to commit a mass shooting. So we're not going to do that. But what we the reason we're like, I at least brought Diplo up is because I do think he's one of the best, mm-hmm. or like one of the better ones in that category.
Yeah.
And that,
yeah, I love it.
Even if he will have some of that stuff from his genre, because it's that genre, he can go beyond it, which is something most DJs can't. Like you said, Deadmau5, that's something he can do. Calvin Harris, that's something he can do. Diplo, I think that's something he can do, even though not even in the level of Calvin Harris and Deadmau5, because Diplo even is still stuck in a range. But with this EP, I started to see that kind of going out a little bit. So anything else you want to go to the bone zone?
That's it. I mean, it wasn't that bad. Thank God it wasn't the same happy typey for every song, or else I would have just thrown my remote at the TV and just, like, stopped.
Arbitrary score? I'm going to give it a 3 bones out of 4.
Can I cut a bone in half?
No.
Damn. 2 bones.
Fair.
I was going to get 2.5. But fine. 2 bones.
It's fair.
Dry bones.
Oh. There are two things that Cardi B said that I just wanted to point out that I thought were good. What?
Nothing.
Oh.
We're good.
One thing that was a good point. She says the Me Too movement has ignored video vixens, so like the women who are performing in the background of the videos. She's saying that the movement has ignored the fact that they're also harassed all the time and assaulted all the time by people in the music industry.
But I mean, like, look at Blurred Lines video.
We're going to be talking about the Blurred Lines in a little bit because they need to pay up in a moment.
They need to pay their taxes.
They need to pay up in a bit. But yeah, it's... Let me see if there's like a... Yeah, she said a lot of video vixens have spoken about this and nobody seems to give a fuck. I bet if one of these women stands up and talks about it, people are going to say, so what? You're a hoe. It don't matter. Which is like,
yes,
literally going to be the response. That's going to be the response, especially in these, like we've heard about, especially, maybe not especially, but there was Russell Simmons and the environment around him and other record labels like that, mm-hmm. where the environment around the way women were treated as recording artists, just the production crew, and I definitely had imagined the video vixen is just like horrible. So no one else seems to have gotten a headline about that except for Cardi B, who also happens to be the top charting woman on Billboard's charts right now. So good for you. Also, Cardi B came back from Twitter after quitting, and she is the first person we're talking about on Audio Face who gets to quit Twitter. Maybe.
Wait, she got back onto Twitter?
She signed up for it again, and she left, but she signed up for it again.
Damn, she gets plus 10 points.
Because
she gets the strong bitch award. No, because instead of not a little bitch.
Not a little bitch is meant to be derogatory for Wynn Butler, yeah. Because he quit Twitter.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't need an award. You just
don't need an award.
This is the reason the Not a Little Bitch award exists. Because if you're like...
The amount of shit she get on Twitter.
The amount of shit you get on Twitter by being vocal and then by being like... They go for appearances. They go for...
Yeah, naturally.
Class and culture and things like that. So they got a lot of fodder on Cardi B if they want to. And that's one of the reasons she said she left, because of the negativity. And that's why everyone leaves Twitter, because naturally. Of the negativity, yeah. Which is a great social media platform to run on. Let's keep doing that. But yeah, it makes... You think about like the harassment that people like this get, and you wonder, why do people like Wynn Butler quit Twitter? Or why do people like Ed Sheeran do? When Ed Sheeran quit because people were clowning him after being on Game of Thrones. It's like, that's not even harassment. That's just people making fun of you.
Yeah, like...
We're just having a laugh.
Exactly.
It'll be over in 24 hours, dude. Come on.
Yeah.
But I was just throwing those into the thing. Oh, and here's another thing I'm going to rant on. If you'll give me a moment. So...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's a documentary called What We Started, which is like... God. It tries to rewrite electronic music and like rave culture through the eyes of people who made a lot of money on selling it out. And it basically, it talks to some like the, it's not, basically what you would hate about it, Sean, is it doesn't focus a lot on the music. It mostly focuses on the big names.
Big names, and then it's just literally just a drop. That's all anybody waits for. It's the same thing over and over and over and over and over again.
Like you could do a documentary, I'm sure documentaries have been done on electronic music and like dance clubs, cultures, and how that grew into this.
Remember Unchained on Daft Punk?
Yeah. And trust me, Giorgio Moroder is not mentioned at all in this article. But
oh, fucking assholes.
I'm trying to say, like, they ignore, like, the drug aspect. They ignore the fact, like, they just...
The rape aspect.
They ignore that. They ignore... They just whitewash it so much. And they basically... They don't even talk about the fact that many artists don't do well in it. Or, like, it's just, like, a rough profession, like, a rough genre to be in. And so it's this ultra whitewashing of it that I really hated. There's one quote in here, if I can get it. The origins of disco and techno are quickly summed up with minimal input from the still living legends who made their marks in the pioneering scenes. So, like, they didn't bother to talk to... they didn't bother to talk to people from, like, Chicago or Detroit who are still alive. Who, like,
what the fuck?
It's premiering at Ultra, which is, like, EDC in Florida. And... basically, like, it's all about, like, the big stage EDM stuff, like, the big festivals, which they're the big money-making events, sure, but they're definitely not the best events. They definitely don't have the best music in them. And I don't know. Do you have any, like, I threw this randomly in there because it made me so angry, and I had a lot to say about it, but, like, what's your random takeaway from it?
Hold on. So Marcus and Sadie, are they the people who made the documentary?
Marcus and Sadie?
Yeah. Are they the people?
Yeah. I didn't recognize the first and last name.
Because it says,
yeah.
Ironically, many believe that this genre either burst through recently or grew domestically as an expansion from Europe.
Yeah.
Although the present day masses seem to... Hold on. Oh, there we go. Although the present day masses seemed diametrically opposed to their predecessors, the modern scene is still fighting for its own freedom and aims to continue to build upon what has been started. You assholes, it started in Germany.
Yeah.
In discotheques.
Discotheque is a German word.
Literally, it's a German word, yes. It started then and then moved to France and to England as underground house and then came here. It
was Detroit, all Chicago, underground.
Very underground. Chicago, San Diego, LA. Those are like, that's sort of all underground and not too many people knew about it.
Yeah.
That's what I grew up in. Like, literally. You had to go and know people to get into it because nobody in their right mind at that time knew electronic music at all. That's what it grew out of, asshole. What do you mean, what did you start? You started nothing.
Yeah.
You started lots of rapes and shitty drugs and festivals that don't mean anything.
And festivals where, like, if we want to get...
It hasn't changed. Like, we went to Hard Summer 2014. The same fucking thing.
Like, if you want to get even more into the festival aspect, because, okay, if you're going to make a documentary about the business side of EDM, let's talk about how all of these companies try to avoid the fact that they slap on the wrist, allow people to bring recreational drugs into these events.
Yeah, yeah.
And then act all shocked and surprised when people do so and avoid lawsuits, like, all the time.
Yeah.
Like, it's a calculus they make because they know that if they're too hard on it, a lot of people won't go. But they have been really shady every time there is a death at one of these events that could be related to maybe Insomniac, the company that runs like EDC and all these other events, didn't have enough water. Not my year, but other years, that was a serious problem.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if you're going to talk this much about the industry of it and not enough about the music, then let's talk about the industry. Let's talk about all the bad parts you washed out about it, mm-hmm. and like really reconcile with those. But no, of course not, because that's not where... This doesn't seem to be like a Sundance Film Festival thing. This seems to be like paid for by... I mean, if it's at Ultra, so it's big and like, yeah.
It's all bullshit. Let's go to more bullshit. Jack White's new album.
Oh man, I am so excited to talk about this.
Boarding House Reach.
And Jack White has got a story.
So, I like his music for the most part, usually. I mean, it can get...
How do you feel about the White
Stripes? Samey, but I have to be in a mood.
How do you feel about White Stripes?
I like them. Yeah, like, they're usually good shit. And then when they stop doing their stuff, Jack White on his own.
Yeah.
I appreciate him as a musician. I think he's a fantastic musician. He knows what he's doing. great guitar player. I love the documentary that him, Jimmy Page and The Edge did back in 09, 08. Might Get Loud. That was really cool about the guitar.
Yeah, I remember seeing trailers for that.
Yeah, that was a really, really cool documentary about different playing styles and stuff and what he grew up doing. So I very much appreciate him as a musician. But I did not like this album too much, unfortunately. It was all over the place, to say the least.
All over the place is the best way to describe it.
Like, it didn't have a sound. It was trying to find its footing the whole time. I appreciate that he tried to experiment. He tried to do my favorite thing, which is add rock with electronic. And if you get it right, you get it really right. And it's perfect. And if you get it wrong, you get it really wrong. And that's what happened to a couple of the songs, where they felt really flat and he added too much shit into it. Like the first song, Connected by Love. It's really good, but it kind of dragged on and he kept just adding too much shit to it. Backing vocals of other people and it, like, with electronic and guitar, and it just,
yeah,
need to cut, like,
this is the too many,
cut a few, too many notes,
yeah,
just cut a few and it'll be fine, yeah, the too many notes.
This album felt like, I mean, I didn't want to cut you off from, like, your beginning take, but this album, listening to it, felt like when I'm working on my videos and I finish the first draft, and it's like, okay, done. And there's some like good work in there, but it's 10 pages. And there's a lot of extra stuff that like should have been chopped out and stuff that's like, filler is the wrong word.
It's definitely not a filler, but just too many ideas.
Yeah, like I admire that he did try to experiment a lot, but part of experimenting and doing it well is like making experiment and it sounds good. This doesn't. Like, what was the song? I Station Zebra, I believe. I think I lost like all hope for the album at that point because I saw that I was by that point in the album, I was accepting this as being the kind of thing where it's going to be a little bit all over the place. Maybe it'll find its footing, but it's experimental. And I always ask for more experimental, yeah. So maybe this is the price I pay. But I'm glad this album exists because I can show people this is what happens when you take experimental, but you don't know when to stop.
Pretty much. Well, and that's also, he's trying to expand his...
like repertoire.
Yeah, exactly. So there were some decent songs in here. Also, one of the weirdest ones, Why Walk a Dog?
Oh, yeah, that was the second one.
I was just listening to it, and then I was already just, why walk a dog? Go, the fuck? That's just like really, really random out of nowhere. Just, yeah. And that's what I feel like the album was.
I think the album is, it incorporated all of the weirdest parts of each genre that I kind of like. So, indie, for example.
Okay.
There's indie aspects of this, but the indie that's included in this are the random ongoing ramblings and the parts that make no sense that are supposed to be experimental but not, that are all throughout this album. Then there's parts that are electronic, but the parts that were electronic I found to be kind of repetitive and out of place, which is what my complaints about electronic music can be. And then the rock just seemed like, and how does Jack White like mess up rock somehow? And that's the part that's mostly together because it's the backbone that's keeping the whole album together. But it's so disjointed because of everything else that it even starts to lose the semblance of rock, which is very strange listening to this album. It's 13 songs in 44 minutes, by the way. So it wasn't like a long listen, but yeah, it's just definitely left a lot to be desired.
Pretty much. I mean, I liked some of it, but it was just way too eclectic, like more than Bjork eclectic. Like, and it wasn't trying to be that way. That's the problem. Bjork, we know what we were getting to every time. She's one of my favorite artists of all time. Like, okay, you're going there. You know you're going to get something strange.
And Bjork can stick the landing because whatever eclecticism that she chooses to go with in her music, it, like in her piece, in an album, she's got the tone set together. She's established the parameters for herself and how the album is going to be structured, what it is going to do, what it isn't going to do, what guidelines it's going to follow. When you're going to experiment, you have to inherently put some structure into what you're making, or else you can experiment, it's fine, and maybe you'll end up with some aspects of your music that'll be cool, but otherwise things will be disjointed all over the place. And when you put it in an album, that's no better than putting something together in an album that's all sounds the same, but it's disjointed and makes no sense, because it's all going to sound clunky in the end. And regardless of, even if Jack White's trying to expand his repertoire, I almost hate to say that Jack White is not the musician who gets to do that in this way. Because if you want to expand your repertoire, you do that by not making music, but learning about different instruments and experimenting and doing different things. And maybe you can do like a side album like this, but when you put an album together, that's not your first draft. This feels like a first draft.
Yeah.
This needs a lot of edits. This needs a lot of refinement. Because
then it like went to folk, then it went to electronic rock, then it went to an acoustic song. Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
And not, mainly nothing flowed at all.
And you can do those in the same album, but you have to be very...
It has to be perfect if you're going
to
do that.
You have to consider the musicality and you have to consider the spacing of the albums itself. And definitely was not considered here. It's a shame because I definitely thought that, you know, Jack White, kind of like a rock, kind of like staple, would be able to produce something like decent or even passable, but not here. I'm sorry.
Not a dork. Arbitrary.
2 out of 4.
I was going to give 2 out of 4 too.
Yeah.
Don't want to give him 1 because he's not...
It's not horrible.
It's like not horrible.
I can't say anything... Well, I can't say many bad things bad about it. I just did. But I can't say that it's awful music. Like, it's there's talent there.
Yeah.
It's just not focused at all.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And that's what really needs for it to come all together. Better luck next time.
In like 4 years. How right. long it takes to make an album.
And now, let's get to Robin Thicke. Pharrell and Robin Thicke lost their Blurred Lines plagiarism appeal. Thank God. Because it was similar to the style and feel of Marvin Gaye's Got to Give It Up.
Yep. The legendary Marvin Gaye.
Do 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 do. The best music argument for this song is not a copyright ever is when Vanilla Ice is trying to explain that Ice Ice Baby sounds different than Under Pressure by saying, no, Under Pressure is do 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 do, and this is do 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 do.
It's like,
get the fuck out of here.
Get the fuck out of here.
Don't Pasco.
Don't collect $200.
But in all seriousness,
they landed on income tax.
Oh, man. So the reason we're bringing this up in addition, because I love to laugh at Robin Thicke, and I think Blurred Line's a fucking terrible song video.
It really is. The only part I like is just Pharrell going, woo! That's the best part of the whole song, just that reoccurring thing. That's
how about it. Pharrell just makes all the trap noises for all the trap artists now, and we're good?
I think I would start to like trap if he did that.
Just like have Pharrell, it's like, okay, Pharrell, just make some random noises. Woo! Hey! Ah! That'll be funny.
I mean, it's better than Boat Skirt.
Oh, God.
Let's not talk about this one ever again.
They can make a deal with Pharrell where, in exchange for performing these random, like, onomatopoeia on our songs, will give you some baby's blood so you can continue to look young.
Right? He's like 12.
How much you want to bet Pharrell Williams has a blood boy?
Jesus Christ. Let's not get into that. Anyways,
No, hold on. Before we... We had started following this super early on this year with the Radiohead Lana Del Rey case, where we were like, what... Remember when...
Radiohead's,
apparently, people representing Radiohead sued Lana Del Rey for one of her recent songs, kind of Creep.
Johnny Greenwood couldn't give a less of a fuck, because they all hate that song.
Johnny Greenwood's like, excuse me, I'm busy winning awards for the films that I soundtrack, so fuck off.
Yes.
But we're kind of trying to build a bigger idea of how this all works, because we're trying to build a bigger idea of what makes a sound get sued and what makes it plagiarizing versus what doesn't. Because what we came away from in that conversation was that there is no defined line and it's really hard to like set and describe. So it's another little data point we're adding, I guess.
Okay.
So that's why I wanted to bring it up. But we can go into the big industry shit thing that we've been wanting to do for a while. Ready?
What time are we at?
We're at 53 minutes. We're totally chilling.
We're chill.
Yeah. This is the big, like, this discussion segment thing about industry stuff is just, it's not...
Fuck? Oh, there we go.
Got it?
Yeah.
It's not directly relating to, like, music as far as what you hear, but it's the entire business around music. And so without it, you can't hear music. So it's good to be aware of it. The first story I found was from The Verge on the 14th of March. About a $1.6 billion lawsuit over player pianos that Spotify now has to deal with.
Player pianos.
So let me run you through this story very quickly because it's very antiquated but funny.
What do you mean by player pianos?
Like? So Spotify is currently being sued under a law from almost 100 years ago that applies to player pianos. Because the reason is there is no, the law isn't defined for streaming yet, because our laws and guidelines are very behind for technology. And so a lot of our old music guidelines and definitions go back to phonographs and player pianos.
And muskets.
Hashtag no politics.
Hashtag no politics.
So the way I can describe it right now is that when player pianos came out, it was an issue from songwriters, because they're like, wait, people were buying our sheet music. Now they can just have a player piano like do it for them. This is like cutting into our business in a way. And so something go into too much of the minutiae, was drawn out in this way to where player piano recording companies, which for all intents and purposes, Spotify has become one for this law.
Steinway and Yamaha and others.
Yeah. They owe recording rights and sound rights based on the same law, based on a total number of sales.
Yeah, because you can only get certain songs for recorded onto your player piano.
Yeah. And so there's a new rate for interactive streaming that's like now being in place. And it says, as of this year, services like Spotify are facing a formula that is changing every year from now until 2022. In 2018, they'll be paying 11.4% of revenue, or 22% of total content cost, whichever is greater, in order to pay to the people they owe the royalties to, which I think is like one big association. Mm. And they just like pay it out.
Then they just go.
Yeah.
Spread it out from there. Okay.
So when it comes to mechanical licenses, which is what this is all about, streaming services like Spotify fall under this. And so the conversation we now have to have is that we're now at the point where the music industry has gotten so big and so different from how we defined it in the 1900s that the way streaming services are going to respond to this is to get their own set of lobbyists and make sure that the laws can be rewritten to change in their favor. Now, I don't wholly disagree with that. We shouldn't have our 2018 laws be built on top of phonographs and things like that. And there's not even an inherently bad thing, like a nefarious thing that Spotify is doing here. It's just an interesting story about how Spotify is getting screwed by a law from 100 years ago. But
well, I mean, there's even copyright law. I know, like, the main copyright law in 1976. Like, that's... You didn't have streaming then. All you had were records, and I'm trying to think. It's interesting, to say the least.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny that that all came up.
So basically the key word is just all around mechanical licenses. And like the right to, I guess, have the license to the song without being the owner. So if you think of it in a truly like broken down sense, it is Spotify. But Spotify is not a player piano.
Right. Well, yeah.
But the law is treating it like a player piano.
Basically is a player, a very modern version of a player piano.
Which I think is just hilarious.
Right? Psychically, mine is a player piano.
Yeah.
Psychically.
Why not more hilarious? How Spotify got played by a bunch of Bulgarians?
Yes, I love this one.
It's my favorite. I've been wanting to talk about it for months.
Oh my god, okay. I can't believe this.
And
thing.
This is the reason we are talking about this, because this does go into the larger role of Spotify and like how it works. Because a lot of it's based on playlists and how the playlists can do better than the albums in some cases and can make more money for artists. So MBW, Music Business Worldwide, who does a lot of this like inside stuff, found third-party playlists, so not created from Spotify, called Soulful Music and Music from the Heart. And then they're full of ISRC codes, which I guess are like some code that links to Bulgaria. And the way... and somehow... Music from the Heart was on Spotify's number 84 global list and number 22 on its US-only rankings. And Soulful Music was on number 11 US rankings.
Shit, that's pretty high.
And number 35 on the global chart. And so these tracks contained, I mean, these playlists contained hundreds of tracks, like almost 400, just about 2,000 people subscribing to them. But they basically gamed the system in a way to where I'm going to try to see if I can get the final amount. So That soulful music payout was $288,000.
Okay, how do they question, how does a playlist maker make money from Spotify if you just make a playlist and have it on there?
Okay.
I didn't know you get paid out from that.
Oh, the best part is that the majority of these tracks were just barely over 30 seconds long. Because that's the minimum limit Spotify requires
for a song
in order for the stream to count.
Yeah, and it's 0.004 cents per play.
Yeah.
So if you do something that's 72 million plays, that adds up.
So about, it had about 1,200 monthly listeners. But, so the playlists are usually run by the big companies like Sony, Universal, Warner.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because they were able to set up that playlist and then basically get a bunch of bots to play it on stream for a loop, that got it up in the rankings. And because once your playlist gets high up in the rankings that high, I guess it's assumed in Spotify that the playlist you're making is eventually like a revenue building source. And so you get money for creating that playlist, which is weird to me.
That's very strange to me.
And it doesn't seem like something that a lot of people can do.
But it makes sense, though, because when you go to Spotify, it has playlists there. Like, when a big one is Get Turnt, which if you play on, if you go on a console, like on Xbox One, which I go on, and they have the Spotify app now, you go on there, that's one of the first things, is that, or, like, you have a gaming playlist, which I didn't know if, like, a big record company goes and gets a playlist, that way their artists who are part of their label get, yeah.
Right.
Which, now that makes sense that you said that. Because those millions of people are subscribed to those playlists.
So when it gets into the labeled aspect and how that works, Spotify's, I mean, like a lot of music streaming services have decided that, perhaps rightfully, people are usually pretty bad at picking out music. People just want to hear music, but they don't know exactly what they want to listen to.
And that's why we made Audioface.
To tell people what they should listen to or else they're stupid, no.
Yes, but exactly. For the masses, for the people. Are we not merciful?
This is a public service we're providing you for free, actually. So be happy.
Until we sell out the Squarespace and MeUndies, we sell out fast because Daddy needs a new bike.
Well,
Daddy bought a new bike. Daddy needs to pay for a new bike.
One word, loans. But
credit.
I had totally lost my train of thought because that was really funny. We could go on to the next thing though, because that was kind of like a.
Anyways, I could have made about half a million.
Oh, sorry. No, that's what I was saying. Is that we've created these apps around, or like they've created these apps around playlists, more or less. And Spotify's taken that a step further by making playlist creation and curation like a key part of the platform. Whereas like Pandora or SoundCloud, Pandora directs you to its like network generated playlists a lot, which are a little bit different. SoundCloud's just like a portal.
SoundCloud is fucking weird.
And so that way of giving people an opportunity giving people an option to select a playlist and go into it, that's a fundamental part of how Spotify works. And so basically all the Bulgarians did was figure out how to game it, did it pretty well. Spotify is naturally going to be taking some
precautions
to make sure they don't get ganked like that again. But eventually a major label flagged the issue to Spotify and deleted most of the tracks in October 2017. But based off of the numbers that MBW predicted, yeah, about $1 million was swindled out of it in the entire thing.
Damn. Good shit. All right, well.
Better than Bitcoin.
Well, if you listened to the Kaiser Report on RT, you would have made like $8 billion.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. I have this quandary with the fact that we talk about Spotify so much when there's so many other streaming services, but like, the fact is we're now in this world where like Spotify and the other streaming services are mostly owned by big tech companies. And so what they do relating to music is a really big deal. And so every single one of our stories ends up relating to Spotify in some way, including this, where the music industry as large had its, the revenue of the US like record industry went up $1 billion from 2016 to 2017, partially because of Spotify, an increase in subscriptions. They increased from 22.7 million to 35.3 million, and that's partially from Spotify, partially from Apple Music, Tidal, Google Play Music, all the others. But it's weird because we're building an entire platform off of people paying $9.99 for unlimited music. So I'm really curious as to why that like is bringing up, well, yeah, why is that bringing
so much money? How many Spotify subscribers are there?
The last number I remember off the top of my head was like just south of 50 million paying subscribers.
50 million times $10. Yeah.
But
times 12. There you go. That's a lot of money. Plus then how advertisers for the people who don't subscribe because you have to listen to ads.
Yeah, 90s. Do-do-do-do-do. I believe Spotify has 96 million non paying subscribers.
Plus the Russian bots are now Bulgarian bots.
The Bulgarian bots. The Eastern European bots.
The Eastern European, watch out for the blockade, man.
It's a whole new meaning of Mechanical Turk.
Oh my god. I forgot about the Mechanical Turk. Fuck you, Amazon.
I totally forgot.
Jesus, I forgot that exists. People still do the Mechanical Turk thing.
Oh yeah. It's missable, but it still happens.
Dude, I would never do that.
Another major thing to point out is that mostly who receives the streaming revenue is like the RIAA, and the record labels.
Mm, naturally.
And so then it goes through the let's pay everyone else, and then, oh yeah, the artists.
First CEO needs a new yacht, new Beamer. Then I'll give like little Yachty some change to go shoot up his house.
Beamer? 4 series or 5 series?
No, seven he series? Has the 80 mile EV.
The i8?
Yeah, he has an i8. Because he allegedly cares about the environment and shit. But wants to go fast.
I'm sure.
But then he's going to hammer it, roll it upside down, and catch on fire and break his leg. It's a blessing and a curse, though, because more and more people are able to listen to a wide variety of music, but artists still don't get paid.
Yeah.
And it's getting better. I mean, we had that story about a month ago or 3 weeks ago when Spotify actually figured out how the fuck to pay people. But it's still, if you hit a certain number of humans that have listened to you, then you can get paid.
Yeah.
Paid the right, I should say.
Yeah.
So it's still, I mean, it's early days. Spotify didn't really get big until 2012. I was on that shit in 2011.
Don't sleep.
But there, because we got to be hipster with everything.
Of course. But there's also, the record label industry also got some concessions from Spotify this year, in that now they're paying out slightly higher royalties.
Yeah. Exactly.
So there's also that going on. So things
2018 will be hopefully a little bit better every year. There's still plenty, especially if you're up and coming artist who not many people know of. It's still rough in the streets. I think it will forever be rough in the streets. Well, honestly, just because of the way music is.
2018 is a rough year in media writ large. We're talking music, we're talking content of all kinds. And so mainly it's because it's a big transformative year. And we're going to see a lot of big, not big, but like a couple paradigm shifts that are happening right now.
Yeah, naturally.
We're in the point where these streaming services could be consolidated potentially. So maybe SoundCloud or some of these other companies get bought up and become bigger things. The rules around them change. So there's definitely a lot that could happen between now and then. But for artists, I think it's the best advice is to just keep doing what you're doing, because there's the business aspect that we've talked about for like 20 minutes or so, but there's the music aspect, which is what this honestly is. And if you keep focusing on your music, you'll be able to like run around to the business. And like the business will be there. People will always want to listen to music. There'll always be an apparatus for doing that. And to figure that out, it's kind of changing all the time, but like, obviously don't be an artist and go, oh, all these weird things are happening, I guess I just shouldn't release or do music right now. That's not the thing to do.
No. So there's a very interesting article from Pitchfork on how to be a responsible music fan in the age of streaming, which I read through a little bit. I mean, I have my own take.
Yeah, I want to hear your own takes as well. But you want to go through parts of the article and then
I mean, there's so much. Hold on.
Or like, just talk about it off the top of your head. Like, what did you agree with in the article, or what did you disagree?
So it's like, hold on. I know it's gonna be dead air.
No worries.
I'm trying to, because I had like a great idea when I was reading it, but I lost my train of thought.
It organizes it into three categories. So it's talking about the scale aspect of it. It's talking about where you're individually on the platform.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing this article talks about is how, like, streaming companies want to create their own contracts, I suppose, and their own royalty systems, which is what we've been talking about as Spotify, when it becomes not just a streaming service, but also a, like, it becomes the music industry. It becomes a label.
It becomes a label, which I would love for it to do.
I don't know if I would love for it, but I'd be interested in the concept. It could, it's like,
it could be very, very good or very, very bad at the same time.
It's like when you hear Jeff Bezos is bringing books online. Could be a good concept. Let's see where this goes.
Or him buying Whole Foods and now having the Washington Post and being part of the Pentagon board. And I'm just stop.
Did you find your place in the article yet?
A little bit. So it's more of how you get what streaming service you use.
Mm-hmm.
Which most now use Spotify as its most popular.
Yeah.
And if you subscribe to it or not. If you subscribe to it, one thing, well, I know for me personally, I say if you really like a band, you can still buy physical specs of an album and you can go see them live. Which for me, my favorite bands, I do that. I have most of Radiohead albums on vinyl, a bunch of their CDs. I have a 1975 album on CD. I have a couple of Cigarettes ones. I have a Bjork album on vinyl. And then I go see them live. That's what, like, whenever I can. And I know that's really small, but at least in the age of streaming, it's something type of revenue. You can also, if you want to buy merch, you go to their actual site as well. Instead of going on some different vendor and whatnot that you don't know if they're going to get. If they're paying royalties for the album cover or like lyrics or something, you don't know where it's coming from, like on eBay, or you just go to the site, you might pay $10 more for a shirt, but you know that it's going to that band or that artist 100%.
Yeah.
So that's one way, like, I know for me that I do is always looking at it. And the article is saying, I think it said something on that, and then...
It had a part in the beginning in the issue of scale section where it's talking about your... going to big festivals versus are you going, to individual concerts?
Yeah, I was
and that's
to say
kind
that.
Of the same idea.
Yeah, it's exactly where if you go to a smaller concert, but it's just for them, then you know they're getting that big chunk of change. So, yeah. So we go see Radiohead in Berkeley instead of seeing them at Coachella.
Correct.
Yeah. And Tom York saying, can we bring you to Coachella? Because we were a better crowd. So hashtag fuck Coachella.
Yeah, it's maybe that part isn't talked about as a lot, but I don't know how much of that you can talk about. Is
it's
that
hard
in having these events, you're also kind of watering down the experience from a fan perspective. And I guess without being around my words, I hate going to some of these festivals because you're around people who may be passively interested in the band. And so they're less there to see the band and more there to just experience the festival, which is horrible if you just want to go there for the music.
Which is why I hate Coachella so much.
Yeah.
Because people go there just to go, I'm wearing a flower crown. I'm cool.
And
I'm in the middle of fuck nowhere in California because I'm cool, and I'm going to post this on Instagram. Oh, I don't even know what band is playing. Fuck off. You had the experience, you had the means to go see some of the greatest bands in the world play, and you're just like, I'm there to have a good time.
That's...
Fuck off. I'm just keep going up, because I know these people, and they piss me off.
But I think
we never even had that conversation. We should do that sometime.
No, I have way down in the... I think we want to do this during the summer when most of the festivals are happening. There's a festival talk thing for a discussion topic we can do. I think it'd be really
fun. We can do that in summer when they're a bit more up in the air.
Because, like, there are more festivals happening. You can hear about them.
Yeah,
Really fast on that, and then getting back to this, I guess. That issue of scale, which is what they're talking about, where in order to really enjoy smaller artists and to make sure they get that most, you have to think of how you consume music, not on this macro level where you're getting a lot of everything, but where you have to really take down as few of the middle people involved in it. Do you have any other stuff on it? Because there's another part that also talked about, we went over the, I'm blanking out, this is going to be so fun, this Dead Air podcast.
Right.
We went over the fact that Spotify wants to become its own label, but then the end of this article is like, the future of music is free.
Yeah.
Which is a bold statement, but like, it's not
hard
to believe, because currently, like if you have a Spotify subscription, you get music for damn near free every month. Mm-hmm. Like it's $10 a month and that's all. Other than some like Tidal bullshit, which will be like worked out in a couple years once they get more songs in there.
Or it just collapses onto itself and like ceases to exist.
There's always that. But
what if the owner of Tidal or CEO of Tidal, what if he starts drinking Cristal?
Yeah.
Jay-Z ain't gonna be happy.
I think it's, so one thing this article mentioned, which is in my head in like the podcast and content world, is that podcasting is a medium. Its business model involves usually free episodes in the idea that you direct people towards branded content or other sponsored content elsewhere, or you get people to pay for like subscriptions to your like Patreon page or whatever you do, right? And so it's kind of saying that like music might face that brave new world where like GoFundMe-ing and crowdfunding all of our different favorite musicians, which I don't know if that's better, because that means, to me, that makes it seem like it's gonna be harder for musicians to get in. Like it might create a new like avenue for some, but I think it's gonna make it a lot harder for others. Whereas you get this other platform where, hey, for a set amount of money, you get all the music in the world and you can dive in as much as you want to. I think that is more conducive for discovering artists, because if an artist is gonna put their new music behind a paywall, how do you discover new music?
I mean, that's what I said earlier, where it's blessing, it's curse. The blessing is you get to really expand your horizons on music, and I think that's also why you saw that big boom from just a year, because more and more people are starting to use streaming services.
Yeah.
And or platforms. As I said, you get different music that you would normally not hear, because you hear these different playlists that record companies put out or people themselves put out, your friends share and everything, because now instead of having to keep paying for this music, or you can only hear it on the radio, or you have to keep going on YouTube or this or that, you have so much more, you have the means of going and just going on your phone and going, okay, let's see what's new.
Yeah.
What's albums coming out here? Wow, I've never heard of this artist before. Cool, let me have a listen. I can just send a link to an album and say, hey, listen to this. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's like it's half of my conversation with my friends too. It's like, hey, check out this like song I think you'll like. Or
yeah, whatever. That happens to me all the time.
That's a it's a great aspect of music that isn't in the creation of it, but it's in the consumption of it. It's in the sharing aspect. And so that, yeah, you're right. It's the blessing and the curse aspect that comes with it. Is there any idea you have, like, you have a lot of general ideas to fix music, but on the relation of this, is there like a business model idea that you have? Because I have no idea of how to do this other than making Spotify slowly cost more.
It definitely has to cost more. It really should. It's $10 is fucking fuck all for that.
If Netflix slowly raised their prices over time.
That was about what did they start at?
I remember them being at $8.99 and they moved to $9.99 and then
You could, yeah, they could raise it. I don't know if they could have some type of things with record companies, kind of deals and everything to get in, so that way they can kind of control the revenue bit. But I take that with a grain of salt, because I don't trust record companies much, because they don't have the best ideas usually for paying artists. Certain ones do, certain ones don't. And
the major ones generally don't.
Right, major laser. Honestly, as I said a couple of times before, you're going to have to wait 2-3 years to really see what new innovations come, even in technology in general. And then from there, you can kind of see if streaming really stays at this, and if more and more artists kind of come together, and I don't know if they can form their own thing for streaming specifically, their own union,
basically. I think Tidal was that attempt.
I mean, Tidal is that attempt, but it's still new. And that's why I say if you wait a couple of years, you'll see if people jump onto Tidal more, because you have these exclusive things for Tidal or for Apple Music where you pay more for these services, but these artists know that they're getting paid a bit more.
Right.
Which again is a blessing and curse. That's why Tidal, I mean, Jay-Z's album was only on Tidal. Deadmau5 next week that we're going to review is only on Tidal.
Yeah.
So that way we have to go on there, so that way they know they're getting a bit more money from it. I mean, even Thom Yorke, when he released an album in 2014, the solo albums, Tomorrow's Modern Boxes, he did it on this really weird
BitTorrent, like uTorrent.
Yeah, he went on Torrent. Yeah, he torrented the album. That way you get it. He knows all of that revenue is going straight to him. It's pretty easy if you know how to torrent. For a lot of people, like, what the fuck was he doing? He's just trying to, like, make a statement of saying, hey, this is another way to get music. You can tour, the artist can tour in it.
Yeah.
So.
But I think you're touching on the fact that artists are now getting creative. They're not being, like,
they're not there's definitely not just going, the Johnny Cash going straight up to a record company, here's my song, can I make a record?
Yeah. It's very much like, we're going to do this ourselves, because with new technologies like the internet, we can manage more of this on our own. And because we need to bring in communism every single episode, control the means of music production and distribution on our own.
Are the humble musicians going to miss
humble music.
Any? They're going to miss nothing but their chains?
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to end on that.
We'll end on that. Thank you for listening if you somehow made it through that roughly hour, 10-minute-ish thing.
That's a good one.
That's good. Next week is going to be fun music-wise because...
Deadmau5. Have
we decided if we're going to do, if we're going to dip back into middle school and listen to an Escape the Fate album?
Jesus Christ. Yeah, why not?
Why not? We never review... So I'm not going to follow that up. I'm Dan from the internet on Facebook and YouTube. You can follow me on Twitter, Dan from the web. Sean, if you, for some reason, want to follow him, is SW Suarez. No, triathlon stuff.
Yeah, great stuff. SW Suarez. I'm building my bike and that's going to look gorgeous. So.
Purple's my brand, asshole.
No, I've liked purple longer than you. Suck a dick.
Or fund my lifestyle. The choice is yours. Bye.
Cheers, guys.